Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
Robert is being chased, thrown on the run, and it is caught! Touchdown, Keenan Allen! What a great...
My goal is not to break you. My goal is to make you harder to break.
Number six!
Huge sack by Joey Bosa.
Touchdown!
Picked off at the 8-yard line by Derwin James.
Sets his speed, takes a shot downfield, has night.
Pod touchdown, Chargers!
Grab your lunch boxes and go attack this game with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
For the first time in season 2024, Justin Herbert throws for more than 30 times. He completes more than 20 passes and throws for over 230 yards. But most importantly, he looked pretty damn good on that ankle. And for the first time since 2018, the Chargers get the win at Mile High. Holding off a very strong finishing Broncos, 23-16. Vital divisional contest that sees LA leapfrog Denver into second spot in the AFC West. More to get through. Hold on tight. This is the Thunder Down Under Chargers podcast. I'm Andy Proffitt. I'm joined by Jack Reed and Alistair Lloyd. Welcome, boys, and welcome to our listeners wherever you are joining us from. It's good to hear that Jim Harbaugh's ticker's okay, because that fourth quarter comeback and the penalty on the failed onside kick almost had me in the blue tent myself. Late in that one. Stick around for a victory nightcap and the week six recap. Kick us off, Jack.
Let's see this as eight quarters of football, because you've got the offense that needs to play four quarters and you've got the defense that needs to play four quarters. So out of an entire eight quarters of football, I think we played, let's say, five. I think the offense played the first two quarters very well. I thought the defense played the first three quarters very well. The last quarter for the defense was a bit of a, as you said, Andy, heart stopper. The second half for the Chargers was less of a heart stopper, more of just a truck breaking down completely. However, going up 23-0 and the Broncos looking like absolute piss for three quarters, and not because they had a quarterback who was young, but I think we game planned perfectly for them. We had some major injuries, which I'm sure we'll talk about, players coming in and out of the game. They're not major, should I say, but they were impactful. But yeah, that's how I want to watch my football. Not a super worry at the end, because, you know, I thought we had the game pretty much in hand, especially in that sort of final 4 minutes. But geez, that onside kick that had to be redone. But we were okay.
Especially because of how much Will Lutz bungled it. Absolutely bungled it. And then we're getting a redo.
I note that Jack has completely forgotten about special teams. It's only eight quarters instead of 12. So that's like laying down the challenge to Ryan Ficken. You don't even count anymore in Jack's estimation. But I watched, as is my wont, with Andy at his place with his little tyke sitting there cheering it on. I think it's the first time Ozzy has watched a game with us, at least. And geez, he's a talisman. The first three quarters he's watching with us, Chargers are kicking ace. And then we take a significant prolonged break for him to have his dinner and have a bath, get ready to bed. And then suddenly, what happens? The Chargers start doing Chargers things. And it was almost kind of nice, as someone who's so used to being beaten up by this team. I was just like, yeah, slap me. Do something weird. Do something awful. And seriously, when they lined up for that onside kick, and it's a redo because Darius Davis has done an illegal shift. If it was a TV show and they like zoom into my eyes, completely glazed over, just in the background, I'm hearing, "Hello, darkness, my old friend." But we're not that Chargers team anymore, Andy. So of course we hold on. It's a different culture, and we have our first win at Mile High since 2018. Nothing to worry about, right?
No, I felt pretty confident, even when Bo Nix and co started getting the wheels turning. I still kind of felt confident. 23-0 was solid. It was a really bruising start. And look, right off the top of the game, scoring on the first four possessions, three drives over 10 plays, including one of 20, 10 and a half minutes, the most plays in a drive for the Chargers, I think, since they've been recording the stats since 2001, which was awesome. It just seemed like Greg Roman came out and said, I'm going to deal the deck today. And, I got cards up my sleeve, and it was fun to see. Jackie made a really good point about players coming in and out. And whilst it wasn't like kind of crucial. It was obviously impactful on both sides of the ball. It stunted a bit of rhythm, and you know, in a good way. Like we'll get to it. There were some rookies who played some significant game time, and one in particular, I know Al's going to bang the drum about him, had one heck of a pass breakup, but the way that Greg Roman started that game, 28 passes and 15 rushes over the first four drives, and the way that that shifted into the second half was 9 pass, 17 rush. And it was falling back into a bit of conservatism. I felt like we were humming a little bit. Simi Fehoko was standing up and doing some great things. Herbert was the hottest he's looked in five games. So,
for sure.
It's hard to sort of break that down and, you know, feel the results one thing, but feeling comfortable about how it all kind of panned out.
I think, well, let's start, Andy, you noted. Let's start with the offense and let's talk about Justin Herbert because, well, for me anyway, he's been a little bit of a whipping boy and saying, oh, he's got to do better. He's got to do better. Come on. You don't have the receivers around you now. You got to make him better. But clearly the injury that he had to his ankle was hampering him a bit because this was the most agile and adroit and definite Justin Herbert we have seen, I would say, almost since last year sometime. He was absolutely zipping the ball. And the one thing that I liked the most and what I look for, you know, those Dan Jeremiah calls them trailers or trucks. You know, trucks pull other players along, trailers just trail behind. You know, Justin Herbert threw to 9 separate receivers against Denver, and they're getting open. Yes, that's a little bit of Greg Roman's game planning, but also, you know, we're talking about guys like Simi Fehoko, Darius Davis, Kamani Vidal. I'm sure we'll talk about him in a second. Guys that are pretty low down, and you had McConkey coming in and out. QJ goes in and out, especially with that stuff early. He's still making plays. Justin Herbert's still getting the ball in playmakers' hands. So credit to Justin Herbert. He looked like he had control of the offense for the first time, and I'll say that for the first time this year. And the balance between pass and run, even though for me watching, it was like, oh, Justin Herbert's passing the ball more, it still felt balanced, and that's what I really enjoyed about it.
Yeah. Justin Herbert, like you said, it was his best game for the season. He looked like his old self. But let's not forget, it's also having Rashawn Slater at left tackle and Joe Alt at right tackle. And I thought Rashawn Slater might have just played his best game as a Charger. I know that's a big call. He's had some very big games. But just getting through the all 22 today, man, it didn't matter if it was the running game. They ran to his side on outside runs. He completely stonewalled whoever his direct opponent was. It just makes a difference because Greg Roman was able to scheme up plays over the middle of the field. He used Denver's attacking defense against them. Herbert went 8 of 9 for 78 yards in the intermediate middle part of the field. And it was just those third and pretty longs, actually, that kept drives going and allowed 3 drives of 10-plus plays. Your control time of possession, you silence that loud, aggressive Denver crowd. And there was, like, I joked at the start, but really, when you have a 23-point lead at three-quarter time, it is virtually unassailable. And then
virtually.
But I do have to be careful. But we got through this one unscathed. But what do you think? I'll throw it to you, Jack. There are people out there who are quite upset that the team took the foot off the pedal and started calling runs. I think, as you said, Andy, 58% of the second half calls were runs. On offense, was it the right call with that lead, and or was it not? Do you keep going full throttle?
Okay, 2 parts to this question. Would I love to see us put up 47 points or 40 plus points? You know, where like the Lions did against the Dallas Cowboys. Would I like to see us put up 30 points, 40 points? Sure. I just don't think Jim Harbaugh or Greg Roman is that type of is that type of play caller. Then that's not their philosophy. So, yeah, I mean, I'd love to see us dominate a team for 4 quarters, as I said, or for 8 quarters, dare I say, on both offense and defense. However, you've got to think that we're building something. You know, there's always that worry, especially at the wide receiver, that the wide receiver room was thin. You've already got guys playing out of their skin. Fehoko makes an amazing catch. All this kind of stuff. Seems to be working. Was I frustrated? No, I wasn't, because it was a 7-foot, like a over 3-score lead, 4-score lead. And you're going, yep, I can deal with that. That's fine. Defense is balling out too. I wasn't worried about it too much. 58% is still not 75%. So I'm happy. If that's the way we're going to win football games, that's the way we're going to win football games. And I don't have any issue with that.
Yeah. And Herbert is still injured. That factors into it. And as Tui, one of our listeners, said on StormCloud, playing at altitude can take a toll and increase injury risk as the game wears on if you're not used to those conditions. So maybe there's a bit of a forethought from the coaches saying, we've got this lead. We've already had a lot of guys come out of the game injured. Let's just get home, take the chocolates and on to the Cardinals on Monday night footy. What do you reckon, Andy? Do you kind of feel the same on that?
I do. It's...
Well, let me give you a bit of context, actually, so you can speak about something slightly different. Chargers have now not scored a second-half offensive touchdown since week one. Yeah. 9 second-half points in their past 4 games. So what about the broader theme?
Yeah, the bigger picture is the concerning one for me. During the game, there was that emotional battle of, oh, this is new. We're up 23-0, and then we're just kind of, we're sort of used to, I don't want to say it, but charging a little bit and, you know, allowing the other team back in the door. But it is the bigger picture of sort of getting conservatism is a thing for Roman, for Harbaugh. You take a look at not opting to go for 2 points up 19-0 to make it a 3-score game. I joked about this with Al. His furor was palpable, and I was scared for my son that he was going to be throttled as a result of that decision. I digress. I want to see a little bit more kind of kill. And, you know, maybe you're right. Maybe it was the influx and outflux of players, receivers. Sullier was was in the game. Pipkin's out. I don't know if that's a win or a loss for the interior of the offensive line. Maybe shortly Jack can shed some light on that for me. But it's a concern that we're not scoring points because you come up against a well-drilled team with an experienced quarterback, and you can really cough up a 3.5 touchdown lead.
Just for argument's sake, and let's defend Roman a bit, do you feel the need as a play caller to open up the playbook and go, you know what, we're just gonna try some stuff? All of a sudden that stuff gets on tape when really you didn't have to do it. You're up 30-35-6. You know, are we going to be running, what do they call them, ladder plays to offensive linemen? Like, as again, I'll use the Lions because I watched that game. Or are you just keeping things close to your chest and understanding that, hey, it's week, well, it's our fifth game. We're still getting an understanding of the offense, and we're just going to keep things within our arsenal just yet. That's if I was defending him for this game only. However, this is now a trend because the adjustments that were made in the Pittsburgh game by the offense were pretty terrible as well. So I think Roman is on, and the Chiefs. So Roman is on notice to be like, hey, what's going on in the second half? Because clearly defenses are shifting things, changing things. We take our foot off the gas and we just go, oh, we've got this. So it'll be interesting to see if we've got the capacity this year to have those killer second half kill shots.
But we can't say we want everything as well, listeners, right?
Correct.
Let's go 1 week at a time. So we've been crying for Herbert to have more pass attempts. He has his most for the season, more in the first half. But suddenly we're finding success running outside of the tackles, which hasn't happened as much. 7 carries, 55 yards. I was calling in week 1 and week 2 for more play action passing. I was thinking, geez, this is pretty uncreative. Well, lo and behold, play action rate is up to almost 40% of dropbacks. And I thought schematically he mixed up, Jack, some jet sweeps. He used Darius Davis on a few. He used Quentin Johnston. There are a couple of really nice tight end screens. Disley had one for 20 yards.
Definitely.
So I know recency bias makes you think of that last quarter, and it was frustrating. But overall, it's definitely, you know, day after day, get a bit better today than you were yesterday. It was certainly that this week, and hopefully something they can build upon. All right. Any other kind of, we've spoken about the good stuff on the offense. Do we want to transition and speak about some other things that might be concerning us? I've got a feeling, Jack, you might like to have a moment to share your feelings and thoughts about the interior offensive line.
Listen, people, we were chatting offline with our great friend Ryan Watkins and Kyle, And they were sort of, and Alistair, you chipped in as well, and you were looking at the All 22 today and said, oh, I didn't think the interior was too bad, because of my notes here, I have some major issues with what's going on pre-snap and the communication and what's happening in terms of Bozeman, who's calling out the protections, because over and over again, I'm seeing the both guards, Pipkins more so than perhaps Zion Johnson. Zion Johnson's getting there. But the missed assignments, man, the amount of times that I've seen over this season of just free rushes on blitzes coming through and the offensive line, you've got Bozeman or Pipkins or Zion just kind of like, just like going to space and going, oh shit, what am I meant to do? I don't know what it is. And this was the discourse we were having today, is who is responsible for calling out blitzes? Who is responsible for calling out the cornerback or the A gaps and the B gaps when those linebackers are coming through? Is it Bozeman? Is it Justin Herbert? It's hard to tell when you're not there. So I'm not going to be super critical, but I do have issues with it. And to how well it'll actually set us up if we decide to go into the playoffs this year. Because I think if I'm an opposition defensive coordinator, I'm blitzing all day. I'm stunting. I'm doing all sorts of things with my edges just to confuse them, because I don't think the communication's good enough.
Well, would you believe that Vance Joseph did in fact blitz on 60.5% of downs, almost a record number? It does put strain on your pass protection rules when that happens. And no doubt, Jack, the stats are the stats, right? Herbert was still pressured on almost 40% of his dropbacks, which is beyond the mark where we would say you can effectively operate. So I think that just underlines and highlights how well Herbert played. It is also a fact, Jack, often, weekly, there will be an unblocked rusher coming free up the middle, usually off a twist, because Zion is looking one way and Bozeman is looking the other. It's correct. Always in between those two. So something ain't working, and clearly they're not stupid. They're watching the same stuff on tape. It's obviously harder to execute than it is to theorize, because when suddenly they haven't done a twist for four snaps and then they do it, that's where the mistake happens. But that is certainly one area they must clean up. What do you think, Andy? Wide receivers, tight ends, like how are you feeling generally? Anything else to be worried about on offense?
Look, nothing that sort of hasn't been brought up before. For me, it's not necessarily who's responsible for calling the protection, for calling the blitzes. The issue is, and it's still five games into this line for the most part, especially with the center being the new piece. It's the cohesion, and they're things that you grow into, I think. So without being too harsh, I think there is a little bit of forgiveness there. It is concerning, of course, but I really like the way that the wide receivers stepped up, and to use the phrase of our old coach, the warrior spirit amongst them. Ladd McConkey, every time the ball came to him, got poleaxed. Quinton Johnson got hurt, and if this was last year, I'm thinking he's just going to sit out the rest of the game. Comes back on, Sime Fehoko gets his chance, and essentially, it was a great throw by Justin Herbert. Randy Mossed Riley Moss. Awesome.
it wasn't Sanjay Lal happy about it on the sidelines.
Wasn't he?
Hey, Andy, from a sports science perspective, I know this is your past kind of studying. We were chatting
I get roped into this shit.
Sorry, so I can't remember who said it, but is there an issue with how Ladd McConkey is exposing himself to hits? Because it happened over and over. He got copped really hard on that first catch because he's going down. He's almost exposing his body. Like, did you notice? Is that something that you noticed, or you go, oh, it is what it is? It's a bang bang play.
For me, I love the way that Ladd McConkey goes about his movements after the catch. He's incredibly elusive. Sometimes it comes off that 7-yard pass to 38-yard gain from a couple of weeks ago. There was a few double teams, and you know what? To be honest, I reckon there were a couple that were like helmet first, that kind of stuff. Like Derwin James got suspended for.
Exactly.
So yeah. I don't really think. Look, I'm not going to say that refs were refs, because when I get into Cortland Sutton's touchdown reception, y'all can get fucked. I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with the way that Ladd McConkey goes about it. He's a small guy. He's a little whippet. But I don't think that he does anything that's overly careless or stupid. I love watching him go about it the way that he does.
Yeah. It's a bit worrying because he is so slight and you kind of wonder whether he's opening himself up. It's an interesting one.
Sore boy. We'll see what happens on the injury report. Before we hit the defense, I think, Jack, we got to acknowledge choose your destiny.
It was exciting, wasn't it? Flawless. We asked absolutely. For it, yeah. Yeah, we asked for it. How good was it? That throw from Justin Herbert was exceptional, but that catch is not easy. And for a rookie to make that catch, finger tippers and to go after the catch and not be caught. And I thought he actually looked okay on some runs too. Not as good powerful.
Great contact balance.
Yeah, really not as not as powerful as I thought that he looked in preseason. So maybe that's just NFL speed and NFL level linemen. But yeah, Kamani Vidal, you beauty.
Yeah, well, we asked the question: could he be, you know, a key to the receiving game out of the backfield? And it's a small sample space, but that was a big tick and a big point in the right direction. So very exciting. On the whole, good. All right, over to the defense. Jack, what did you see, man? What stood out to you?
Well, let me just start off, and it's a bit of a weird place to start, but I thought it was the standout defensive play of the game, and it's not the interception by Molden, it's not the strip sack by Mack, but it was Tahib Steele on the incredible pass block, or pass breakup, should I say, in the first quarter, because that, if that happens, that changes the game completely. Bo Nix gets a little bit of pizzazz going. All of a sudden, they've scored. You've got a fifth-round pick who, and I'm going, this has got to be a touchdown. He's going to give away a PI or something. This is it. He's done. But he's so calm, so calm. He almost doesn't even turn his head around too much, so he always keeps sight of who was the receiver? I can't remember who it was. Was it Mims?
Mims.
So, and Mims is no slouch, right? Mims is a 4-3 guy. So, and that, he gets his hand in there perfectly. Fifth round pick, we relied on them a little too much, obviously, when we had some injuries. Fulton going out was massive. But that, for me, is Jesse Minter. That, for me, is drafting. That's Jeff Ortiz. That set the game up. And I know that's putting a lot on one play, but well done, Tahib Steele.
Totally agree. He did not have a flawless game, right? But when he made that play, he was playing in the slot. And then he gets called outside because, unfortunately, Christian Fulton injures himself. And we're down to our fourth and fifth outside corners. If you think about no Asante, no Fulton, no Dean Leonard with a hamstring, you've got 2 fifth-round rookies. And Jim Harbaugh said in his press conference, the first thing he did on Monday is walk into Joe Ortiz's room and say, thank you. Thank you for drafting so well. And they just looked up for the fight. They're both, maybe it's a good call. They're both guys who have played a lot of college football, both experience. Maybe that's a focus with this regime in some later round picks, guys who are actually hardened and you can trust them to come in earlier. And I thought, geez, Jesse Minter just keeps on showing us that his scheme is superlative, and it doesn't matter who you put in there. Everyone will know their role. There's no confusion. There aren't people looking around and pointing to each other very much, and everyone is executing and delivering for the most part. So,
Actually, Alistair, I'm going to just call you there because I think I've just in my game notes here. There's a Cortland Sutton completion that was called back. There was a miscommunication pre-snap. We were very lucky there. I think there was in this late in the second quarter. There was just a bit of pointing as Cortland Sutton was in motion, and there was a bit of – was one of the only times that I was like, so we're very lucky.
That's right. It came back with a hold, and it did like a 30-yard completion. And if we want to be completely honest, Sean Payton did start to carve up the defense in the fourth quarter, and they weren't – you know, dink and dunk plays. They were chunk plays into the soft underbelly of a cover four defense with in-breaking routes, digs. And I think Tahib still showed some of his immaturity on those plays because that's no good. It's one thing to protect the touchdown and your own red zone, but some of those were 30-yard completions to guys we don't know. I thought that, you know, Pele's great-grandson was playing. I'm like, oh, Vele. No worries. That shouldn't be happening. That is causing unnecessary stress to us, Andy.
Yeah, you're right. I was in my notes. I thought it was a very admirable game from Kem Hart. Was real solid. I don't think there were any targets his way. But as far as Steele goes, you know, in his first start, that awesome PBU, Did look a little late, got gashed by a couple of dig routes late in the game. Look, it's another one of those things that we talked about on offense with guys sort of coming in and out, being moved around. You throw in the altitude there as well. Maybe there's a bit of like, you know, feeling good about having the lead, taking the foot off the accelerator. All of those things for mine are contributing factors. Jack, I was going to ask you, what did you see as far as, you know, three consecutive 8-play drives, 16 points on the board? Is there anything else that you saw that might have been
one wasn't a
big
catch?
Oh, listen.
I said my piece.
Listen, when you're looking at the snap counts, right, and you're saying there's 15 players with 20 plus snaps, I can't remember a defense that wins a game that has that level of snap counts. Like, you've got 15 players rotating in and out, and Tier Tart sits at about 20. You got Finley and Matlock at 8 and 6. So they were moving pieces, man. And I think it was Derwin James's first game back. His PFF grade is really not indicative. I didn't really see him make that many mistakes. He made a couple of really good tackles for loss. The linebackers, Henley just keeps emerging. There was no one thing that I thought Minter made a mistake, but losing, I've just forgotten his name. What's his name? Christian Fulton. There we go. Yep. Losing Fulton is huge. And even Derwin James said in his press conference, he's like, man, when we missed him, that's one side of the field. 2 5th-round picks. I think from Minter's perspective, he did what he did. And I have no issue with it. Mac still had an incredible game. You know, Mac don't crack.
Incredible.
He just keeps playing.
We've got to highlight him, man, because like, it's easy just not to talk about this dude.
Yeah, because he does it every week.
Force fumbled, barely celebrates. Okay, it's another turnover. Fantastic.
Yeah.
31 career forced fumbles since 2014, I think. It's the only player to record over 30 in that patch. It's almost like we have a segment every week on the show about Khalil Mack, like 4 minutes at that, but you can't disregard it. He's seriously the glue. You know, we would have loved to have Joey Bosa in on run defense, but Khalil Mack is really just doing his job plus more.
Can you even say, I know you said run defense, can we even say we're missing Joey Bosa right now? Again, so the number is Bo Nix was pressured on 53.7% of dropbacks, 24 pressures. The Broncos ran one play in opponent territory during the entire first half, and it was the Javonte Williams fumble that Mac forced out. So Jesse Minter's killing it, man. Nix had a zero passer rating in that first half. So again, a bit of leeway if they take their foot off the pedal and calm down and just cruise to the finish line.
I don't think they're taking their foot off the pedal. I think that's pretty harsh to say. I just think you try to stop water with a dam for so long until it starts overflowing, right? And Peyton's no slouch. Yep. Peyton's not a moron. He goes, okay, we're just going to start slinging it. You're a little bit tired. All of a sudden, Bo Nix is running around. Oh, the one thing I will say.
That's a point. Credit to Nix, man. He started scrambling like an alien.
The one thing I will say, though, is can we sack him? Because you know what? I was having visions of fucking Melvin Ingram again. You know how Melvin Ingram always used to go high on quarterbacks and they used to drop and they used to get out? Man,
oh,
I think
Bud
Derwin
was criminal in one of those plays.
Yeah, Bud Dupree was like Melvin Ingram. And I think Derwin did a couple as well. Like, he went really hard and Bo Nix just went whoop. So bit of rush or sack discipline there, please, boys.
I think it was the Bo Nix scrambling, which was my biggest knock on the linebackers, which was just kind of misreading. You forgive Junior Colson, obviously a rookie, missed a couple of weeks, but there were one or two where he didn't know whether to hold or go, and it kind of proved costly. There was another sort of first down that allowed the Broncos to keep driving. But on the whole, like, for everything that was spoken about, wasn't a perfect day, really, on either side of the ball, but it was far from bad, you know.
Yeah, pretty close.
A little purple
really.
Patch.
And you're right, Jack. I mean, Nix, of those 24 pressures, only two became sacks. And there easily could have been three more. I mean, Bud Dupree had a ridiculous one where he got through and I don't know how he missed him. And Derwin had at least one, as you said. Now, Jack, I've got quite a challenging question for you.
Great. Awesome.
Let's talk about Derwin. So Derwin came back. Is he playing for his Chargers career right now? And I'll tell you why. His cap hit this year is $19 million. He's not going to get cut or traded this year. Then he's got two more years on his deal, 25 and 26, and he's due 23.8 mil next year and 24.6 mil the year after. Now, not a lot of that is guaranteed, and you could move on with minimal dead cap consequences. And his play on the field is up and down. Do you think his spot is in jeopardy or not really long term?
It's hard to know because we haven't seen an off season of Ortiz and what he does to manage the cap with a team that he knows really well. Listen, the play from I know there's a bit of a sidetrack, but what Alohi Gilman is doing and Elijah Molden is almost kind of suggesting that Derwin, I'm not sure where you fit in this defense. Like, Gilman is just doing an incredible job at free safety in terms of the communication and dictating. It's freeing Derwin up a bit, but he just hasn't returned to that probably 2 years ago Derwin James, or like the 2.5 years ago. So he's being paid as one of the top safeties in the NFL. There's got to be a conversation about, hey, are we going to restructure? Are we going to put you out to 4 years and just move some money around? But the way the guy speaks, man, and I made it sort of this week, I really tried to watch a lot of the press conferences, and I'm just, the way that he was speaking is so, he's not over the top. He seems to have really put a temper on his passion. He's like, yep, I made a mistake. Oh, we got to do this better. We got to do this better. We're growing. We're growing. He's such a leader and such a dog that I'd rather have him on my football team than not, because he can make those plays and he makes those hits, albeit hopefully legal hits now. I don't think he's playing for his Chargers career because he's one of those guys that Harbaugh would just love.
Yeah. I want to add to that because I think I completely agree with where you're heading, Jack. And I think that's, you know, we spoke about Joey Bosa. Do we miss him? Like, nah, but imagine what we could do with him, right? Having Derwin James on the field, Jesse Minter doesn't. He's not creating an environment that is reliant on one or two pieces. It is a committee effort. It is everyone out there, whoever's on the field for every snap, doing their bit, taking the green dot away from Derwin James, allowing him. He still has the leadership. You can still see him chatting away out there, talking to the guys, getting them in position. He has positional flexibilities really in that Swiss Army knife. You know, Fulton comes off, Derwin goes into the slot. I don't think he had a bad game. I saw the PFF grade and I thought, you know, this is one of those ones where I go, but what was it, like 40 something? Like, that's, I don't know. It depends who they say is the target on the throw, right?
So the Franklin touchdown was Derwin James in man coverage. And like, yeah. I'll finish off your thought first. And then
no, look, I'll finish it pretty quickly by just saying, like, there's a lot more than, you know, what he's doing, you know, in a bit of a purple patch of, he's got that mental thing behind him, having been suspended. He does have to check himself to a degree with how he goes about playing his football. But I think he's an invaluable piece to the defense. And will be. And, you know, he's one of those talents where Harbaugh and Ortiz are just, they're not going to let him go. They're not going to let him go in his mid-20s to another team and wreck it elsewhere.
It was an almost game for him, I thought. And interestingly, he lined up in the slot 23 snaps. So this was a very heavy three safeties game. Molden, Gilman, Derwin. I agree. I think that leadership is really a big draw card. You hear how Harbaugh and everyone else speaks about him being the heart and soul of the team. And he still does have those massive bang bang plays. He gets a hand in there off an edge, almost ball goes in the air, almost intercepted.
Yeah.
If you throw a pass to a running back in the flat and Derwin has identified it early, he smashes those and blows them up as well as anybody. I think for a 6'3" guy, he's not actually a very good player in coverage, in man coverage especially. So when you have him deeper in the middle of the field or in the red zone and you go, hey, you're one-on-one with Troy Franklin, he gets beaten. He's a big guy. But I think Mint is still working out how to use him. And yeah. I think he'll stay on the team ultimately.
Just to put a cherry on top, I just looked at the age profile of the Chargers, and you got to think the players that are above him of note, Joey Bosa is at 29. How much longer is he here? He's not really a leader. Then you kind of go and you've got the next leader is kind of like a Denzel Perryman at 31. Then you've got Khalil Mack at 33. So if you're kind of thinking about managing your age profile, you do want those old hands in there. And Derwin James is such that enigmatic leader that I think.
Do you have Derwin's age there, Jack? How old is he?
28 years old. So if his body holds up, he's probably got another 2 to 3 years, I think, at a really high level. And if Minter stays around and if Harbaugh can harness it, I think he becomes that really wily veteran, like a Tony Jefferson type.
Forgive me for saying he was mid-20s, having just hit 35 myself, 28. I'm hanging on to every day I've got. Feeling him. All right, guys, if there's anything else, I just want to quickly shout out J.K. Scott. His yards average wasn't great. Some of those just in the five, out of bounds. That's what we want to see, brother. Good on ya. Darius Davis looked a little bit more comfortable in his returns, made a couple of good moves. There was one or two early where I thought, oh, here we go, but he came into it, so... special teams, good to have Nick Neiman back in the fold as well.
Shout out Cameron Dicker. How good is it to have a good kicker?
Oh, and yeah, it's just a couple of those moments while you're on that. You're playing at altitude. The guy can sink him from, you know, mid to late 50s, and we're not giving him the option.
But those were those punts where JK pinned him at the two or the three.
You're right.
Is not the week I get on my soapbox about how we're the most conservative game management team in the league. Let's wait for a week where it actually hurts us. While we're winning comfortably, I'm cool.
Especially when I stole your thunder about the point after attempt instead of going for two.
Listeners don't want to hear me go on about that. Good call.
Righto. Couple of awards. I got the yeah, nah. Al's got the nah, yeah, before we get into the teachable moment. So for me, the yeah, nah this week, one could say that the game played out a bit yeah, nah. 23-0 after three quarters, giving up two touchdowns and a field goal, yada, yada. Far from perfect, but with all the changes, as we said, I don't want to be overly critical. I thought the team adjusted pretty well for the most part. So I'm going to have a bit of fun with this one. Because over the years that we've done this show, there's been a common thread. Alistair, you have provided valued insight, data, spectacles or no spectacles, good humour and laughs. You mentioned that Christian Fulton was due an injury with his checkered past a couple of times over the last few weeks. And I believe that this potential loss to the secondary is on you and good your call. Big mouth. And if you think this is harsh, here's another unrelated little tidbit. No. You nominated Nico Collins for Offensive Player of the Year and Aiden Hutchinson for DPOY. No. Enough said.
Oh, no.
I've got the reverse Midas touch. It's not what you
want.
Everything I say, it does come into existence, but with just horrible consequences. Oh,
bad juju.
Bad juju. I won't say
anything
else.
Love you, brother. I thought that was a bit of a laugh.
It's fair.
Knew you'd take it well.
All right. The Nayer Award this week, brother. And I'm glad because we didn't really highlight him. So late in the draft prep process last year, before the draft, I finally got around to Cam Hart. He might have been the 13th corner I watched. And there was enough in his tape to stand out, because obviously his height is noticeable and his length. But watching him, I thought pretty clearly, this guy doesn't really have an interest in tackling, and he misses tackles, and I got Vato vibes, Michael Davis vibes. Well, that was not the case. In this game, a mile high, he was told before the game, you're starting for the first time in your career. He would have been so excited. He played every single snap on defense, all 56. And he comes out of it with three tackles and a run stop. And I've posted something on our Twitter on TDU Film showing one of those tackles and the aggression with which he hit it. PFF gave him an 83.1 run defense grade. So I reckon Cam Hart, not only are you one of the most upstanding young men on the team, we've gone on about that before, but you came in and you did not miss a beat in your first NFL action. Good on you, champ. Nah, yeah, Cam Hart.
Nice. Over to you, Teach.
So one thing that we haven't spoken about, and I guess it's a little bit serious. It was taken quite lighthearted on the broadcast and perhaps afterwards, but Harbaugh having his flutter. So I did want to highlight how important it is to have a contingency plan when things go very, very wrong. Harbaugh leaves the game, passes play calling duties over to Jesse Minter. Jesse Minter makes it a questionable decision, Alistair. You might have said, why are we doing this? However, it gets thrust upon your shoulders. Those are the moments where you either make it or it breaks. I also wanted to highlight that when you listen to the players and the reporters are talking to them and saying, hey, by the way, did you know that Harbaugh left the game? They said, no, what is going on? What is happening here? The skill and the preparation and the maturity and the leadership that takes to have players who are in the heat of the moment and obviously relying on you to make calls to be there, that they don't even notice that you slip in and out and it's seamless and they just go about their business. That, ladies and gentlemen, and I know it's probably not in the best circumstances because it's a health issue, but that right there is why you have Harbaugh as coach. That right there is why you have Jesse Minter, Greg Roman. They just went, business as usual. I know exactly what I'm going to do. This is the way we're going to do it. No bumps in the road whatsoever. That is harder to do than people think. When it looks easy, it means there's hours upon hours upon hours of preparation, thought, and leadership behind it. Harbaugh, we're glad you're healthy, but that is an extremely positive teachable moment. Claire Smith.
Yeah. Fuck, that's one of your best teachable moments. Seriously. Because firstly, the courage, just, I know your teachable moment stands on its own, but the courage and leadership in that moment, he might have been a bit scared, like, what's going on? I can't breathe. I don't know what he must have been feeling, but that didn't show on his face. He very calmly went into the blue tent, walked off, and then the fact that Herbert said afterwards he didn't even know it had happened, that also shows outrageous leadership and humility. He's not telling people, hey, I had an atrial flutter. He just kept it to himself. The team's got to focus. The team's got to win, and they did. And I don't even want to ruin the vibes in the post-game locker room.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah, special man.
Yeah.
Special leader.
It certainly helps having that relationship from Michigan, but yeah, you're spot on, Jack. That's great. Alrighty, fellas, we move on to week 7 against the Arizona Cardinals. Quick injury recap for the Chargers, because since our last show, pre-bye week, Asante Samuel Jr., Gus Edwards, both placed on IR with shoulder and ankle injuries respectively. Still no mention about DJ Chark's 21-day window opening. Not ideal. And as we saw during the game, as we've mentioned, the blue tent had its work cut out for it. Countless players exiting the game, some returning. Of most note, of course, you mentioned Jack, and it's great to see that Jim Harbaugh, you know, seeing a cardiologist and getting that atrial flutter under wraps and looked after. Happy to hear he returned to normal sinus rhythm for a bit of sports doctoring for you, mate. Can't say I've ever seen a coach get a sideline checkup like that. And yeah, we just thought he might have eaten a dodgy kebab or something. But there you go. All right, over to the Cardinals. For a second week in a row, they surrendered a hefty deficit, found themselves in a hole after trailing 23-10 against the 49ers in week 5. But coming from behind to snatch an unlikely victory, the 24-7 margin against Green Bay Packers a bridge too far. Ultimately succumbing 34-13 to the Pack. Deeper in the statistics, the Cardinals' poorest defense sees them in the bottom 5 for first half points allowed. Buda Baker has missed 11 tackles. Sean Murphy Bunting has allowed 182 yards at 12.1 per catch. And Kaiser White, we had to pick on him just because he was an ex-Charger, a whopping 259 yards on 18 of 21 targets. Oof. So the Cardinals fall to 2-4, buoyed only in the NFC West by the floundering Rams. Jack, do you want to hit us off with the opening headline for week 7?
I can. And I'm going to focus on the Cardinals, on one of my favorite players, and doesn't probably get the recognition that he deserves. He slowly is. He's a tight end, but my first headline, or my only headline, is Marry Me McBride. I love this guy. I love Trey McBride. I really liked him coming out.
I'm telling Beck. I'm calling Beck and I'm telling her.
With Marvin Harrison out, he is going to be Kyler Murray's number one target. With no Fulton, with no Asante, with Derwin James, as you pointed out, Alistair, in man-to-man coverage in the slot, not great. I have a feeling that it's going to be a Kyler McBride kind of game. So if we can shut him down, I'd be a very, very happy man. But also, he's a really top, I'm going to call, say, top 4 tight end in the league.
clearly their biggest weapon with Marvin Harrison out, clearly. My headline, gentlemen, is a bit of the old Dr. Jekyll.
My name is Mr. Hyde.
Can't work this team out. Can't work this team out, boys. Their games have been all over the place. They beat the Rams 41-10. I reckon Kyler's performance in that game is still the best any quarterback's put up in any game this year. When you go back and remember him running around and throwing those bombs to Marv Harrison Jr., they beat the 49ers in San Francisco. They played the Bills very close in Buffalo, but then they have pretty poor performances against the Lions. The Commanders smash them 42-14. And last week in Green Bay, that was an outrageously bad performance on the road. So what Cardinals team are we going to get this week? They're at home, so maybe that helps them. At home is where they had their good game against the Rams. But, man, which team do we get? I think it will bear on how close this game is my headline to start things off.
I'm going a bit left from center, as is my want today. And an apple a day keeps Kyler at bay. Only for the sake of this headline working, would I like to see Eli Apple take the field on Monday Night Football. But with Asante on IR, Christian Fulton suffering a hamstring injury, the two rookies on the outside, who knows, you know, bit hot, bit cold. Who knows what Minta will choose to pull out against this video gaming little man, because it could be a case, like we saw the Chargers chasing tail with Bo Nix, it could be a bit of Wile E. Coyote against the Roadrunner. So we'll see what happens. Keys to victory. I'll kick us off. As I said at my game review from the Cardinals Packers, points on the board early. The Cards are 29th in pressure, 28th in coverage. Crucial weaknesses for this defensive unit. Roman to continue to cook up the passing game.
Yep. I just don't see the Cardinals defense with any quality players whatsoever. Just get points on the board early. Herbert to tear them a new one.
And flipping over the other side of the ball, we've just seen Bo Nix scramble 6 times for 60-odd yards. Kyler's probably the best scrambling quarterback in the league. Now, Lamar's the best on design QB rushes. Okay. I reckon just in terms of when there's pressure on and he's got to go do the little Marvin the Martian thing with the legs going Fred Flintstones, he's so fast.
Heavens to
so you got to be ready for it, because really you stop Kyler and McBride and you stop the Cardinals and you win this game. So it starts and finishes there for me.
Yeah, they're operating a very balanced offense, 170 pass attempts, 164 rush attempts. Important, as you said, not only watch out for Kyler using his legs, but James Connor had a down game against the Pack. Still has 398 yards, 300 after contact, 23 missed tackles forced. And I think that last stat is an important one for the Chargers defense.
Yep. I'm going to flip back over the ball and just pick on Murphy Bunting. He's one of the worst cornerbacks in the league right now. The two safeties, no good either. Buda Baker, he's ranked 26th in the league per PFF. And attack the middle of the field. And Mr. Kaiser White, please.
Do whatever you want. Run outside. They can't protect that. Run up the middle. They can't protect that. Throw it deep. So moving on to result predictions, it sounds like we're all leaning in a similar vein. I'm going to say the Chargers go to 4-2. They win this game by more than a score. Chargers 27, Cardinals 17.
Where are we?
I'll wait for you, good sir.
Thank you very much, sir. I'm going to say Chargers 24, Cardinals 10.
Should have gone. I've got the Chargers blazing out to a 17 to pretty cheap start, 17-7 at the half, and then holding on 24-13.
Nice.
4-2 for the Bolts.
Quick one, boys, before we end. Anyone want to see, now that Devontae's gone to the Jets, anyone want to see Mike Williams come back from the Jets to the Chargers? What do you reckon? Jack?
I'll let you go first on this one too, Jack.
Let's do it. No bad blood. It wasn't sort of Keenan wanting it, you know. It seemed to me Mike Williams come back home to Papa. But the question is, does Chef Ortiz want to add that little ingredient in because it might ruin the dish that is currently there and the menu as a whole. So who knows?
Nice.
Yes, the less is more attitude. There's obviously the chemistry there. You're probably getting pretty cheap. I don't know what the situation is with the Jets, but financially, fiscal.
Yeah, less than $5 million. It's just, do you want to give a draft pickup is the question.
Yeah, look, I can't actually recall. I don't know if I saw what was listed as for. I didn't see what the Jets gave up for Adams and whether they'd be wanting to replicate
that.
Maybe? A second. Yeah, they obviously wouldn't be asking that. It was pretty damning hearing Aaron Rodgers flat out blame that game-ending interception on Mike Williams, saying that he ran the wrong route, fell over.
He probably
did a little bit, but
he looked like dog shit for the Jets this year. But come home, we know what he can do. He can catch the ball deep, and at the moment we got nobody who can do that role, and the one guy who's supposed to is sitting out there for howsoever long. Anyway, we trust Joe Ortiz. He'll cook a nice meal, whatever he does.
Nice one. All right, guys. Well, hopefully you enjoyed the show. You enjoy the viewing on Monday Night Football. Chargers, I think, only primetime game this year. No, we've got the Ravens later in the year for the Harbaugh Bowl. But, we will get stuck into this game Tuesday, our time, and see what we do in terms of timing for the show next week. We might just fly off the hip without too much preparation, just to have a bit of fun, hopefully celebrating a win. Until then, take it easy. We'll see you next time on Thunder Down Under.
Bye-bye, Gavner.
Good night to all!